welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast, the audio version of the Josh Meister's Lost blog, which you can find at thelostmeister.blogspot.com.
Welcome to the Josh Meister's Lost podcast. This is Josh, and I've got James721 called in. How's it going tonight, James?
Good. How are you doing?
Great. What did you think of the episode tonight, the season 5 premiere?
Not a letdown. It was a great show. I thought it was pretty fast, and pretty wild ride, but it was exciting. I got to find out a lot of things, and I just blown away.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome too. We were just talking before we started recording about how I think, you know, season 4 was just super fast paced. And it looks like season 5 is going to keep up that same pace, and that's great for me. I think everybody really loves the pace that season 4 took, and I think season 5 is going to go in the same direction. It's going to be great, I think. I also mentioned just before we started recording that at the little 8 o'clock clip show, which unfortunately I missed except the last few minutes, I noticed at the end that Damon and Carlton were talking about how season 5, you know, now we're getting to the part where the plot is really starting to wrap up. We're getting to the point where as they said, they're going to be answering more questions than, you know, giving us new questions to ponder. So it's going to continue to be really fast-paced, and we'll be kind of figuring out a lot of the pieces, it sounds like, as things start to get put together. Just kind of my overall impression of this episode. One of the things that, you know, obviously is starting to happen is we've got the two different sides. We've got Ben Linus's side, and we've got Charles Widmore's side of things. And you know, we've already kind of seen that start to develop a little bit in the past season. And now we've got now we're starting to get into some action involving the two sides. We see that Sun has clearly chosen Charles Widmore's side, which was kind of apparent with one of the episodes last season. And now they've actually, you know, sat down and talked with each other. And it's kind of interesting to see that Sun is trying to pull Kate in onto her side, or at least that's kind of how it seems. So we'll get to that part in just a few minutes. We'll kind of go chronologically through the show. And for those of you who may not have heard my show before, the way that I usually do it is I kind of go through, and as I'm watching the episode, I pick out the things that seem to me the most plot relevant points, and I try to take note of those. So I don't always take note of every, you know, little humorous thing, although sometimes I do if it's particularly funny. But mostly I just like to focus on the plot relevant stuff, and then when we get to the end, if there are any Easter eggs and things like that, I definitely like to talk about that kind of thing too. And then we'll go into light spoilers at the very, very end. I honestly haven't looked at SpoilerFix or Doc Arts' website. I've kind of been trying to avoid like the bigger spoilers, but we'll at least talk about the preview that they showed for next week's episode. We'll do that at the end. Let's see here. So, starting off at the beginning of the season 5 premiere, we get, now, I kind of like to divide up my notes into like flashback, flash forward, or present day, and this episode is really hard to do it. We're at a point in the show now where it's difficult to tell whether you should call the events that we used to call flash forwards as, you know, the present, or whether we should still be calling them the fast forwards. Or flash forwards, I should say. And for the purposes of my notes, I tried to write down flash forward just to kind of designate the areas where we're off of the island and kind of in, I guess, either present day or near future, off of the island. I'm going to call flash forwards. And then we have a couple of, at least at the very beginning of the episode, we had a flashback that was very clearly a flashback. And then all of the things that I'm going to consider the present are the things that are occurring in real time on the island, even though apparently they're jumping around in time. So that's kind of how I'm going to kind of divide things up. Flashback at the beginning, or flash forward if it's something that takes place off the island, or present. And maybe it looks like with this season I might need to kind of rethink that a little bit. But let's see. Oh, and by the way, I should mention we have a lot of people called in the chat today. A lot of the regulars, people I really appreciate calling in and listening a lot to the show. Bailey Bear's here. Diesel99 is here. Mr. Bill. Doc Arst is listening in today. Leland, Kate Jack, and the Missing Toe, too. So, and a bunch of guests. All right, so beginning of the episode, we have a flashback. And Dr. Marvin Candle is, at first it looks like he's an actor in the orientation films, but we shortly find out that he is really a real scientist. And he's taken to the place where apparently the frozen donkey wheel was. We see kind of an x-ray into the earth where they're excavating some sort of a cave, I guess. And Dr. Candle tells them that they can't get any closer, even 1 centimeter closer, and it could have, you know, disastrous results. I'm kind of assuming that it's the frozen donkey wheel. It certainly looked like the object was like a ship's wheel or something like that, which is very much, you know, what the frozen donkey wheel looks like, which was the thing that Ben turned at the end of season four that made the island appear to have moved and so forth. So did anybody happen to notice if they called Dr. Candle, did they call him Dr. Candle or they didn't, or did they call him by a different name?
I think they called him both names. Didn't they refer to him? They said his screen name and then Dr., was it Dr. Chang? I must have been wrong. I hadn't know. I wrote that down, but...
Yeah, I didn't hear what they said. Dr. Chang, okay.
Dr. Chang, real name.
Thanks. So Dr. Chang, maybe that's, sounds like that's his real name then. And Dr. Candle, I guess, is just one of his many pseudonyms that he uses on the orientation film. So Dr. Chang, anyway, it turns out, I guess, again, he's a real doctor. He goes to the cave. They see the frozen donkey wheel on this x-ray thing. And then what we see is that Daniel Faraday was there working in the cave with them. So that's pretty amazing. Now, this to me, seems to be an answer to a question that we had a while back. If you remember when the wreckage of the, you know, supposed Flight 815 was found, Dan Faraday was watching this on TV and he started crying. And maybe this is a little bit of an answer as to why he was crying. It seems that he must have known that there was some sort of a connection. He must have known that the people were really going to be on the island and that he was going to have to go back to the island. Or I guess an alternative theory might be that maybe Dan Faraday went back there sometime later and to time travel, you know, maybe somehow time traveled back to that point in order to kind of get more information on the origin of the island or how things work. Maybe that's why he was working in a cave. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, James?
Well, it's always been mysterious to me as to exactly why he was crying. It's either that the fact that he knew already that, you know, perhaps the people on the island, the people on the island, you know, maybe in the future something happens to them, or he knows already that there are people stuck on the island. The other thing I just thought about, it could be a signal that, here we go, here it's starting now, here it goes again. And he knows that at that point when he sees that plane, it reminds him of, you know, his memories. They're obviously carrying memories back and forth when he does time travel. So he does know something, exactly what it is. I don't know. It could be his love. It could be the girl. What's her, the other?
Oh, right. Charlotte.
Yeah, she could be Charlotte. So it's not certain that they didn't lay it out.
Because
we now know that Charlotte has a bleeding nose and something's going to happen to her. You know, she's going to go crazy or something.
Right, and she's starting to lose her memories, too, we find out later in the episode. So, yeah, that's an interesting point. Maybe at that point when he's seeing these things on the TV, maybe he already knew that, I don't know, whether he was already in love with Charlotte or whether he knew that he was going to meet her and fall in love with her and that she was going to die. That's true, too. That could be another reason why he started crying there. Who knows? But in any case, it does... It seems a little bit more clear that Faraday knew that there was he had some sort of insight as to how the fake plane crash was related to the island. There had to have been some sort of connection in his mind there that that caused him to cry in that moment. So a little bit more of a hint as to the answer to that question.
Yeah.
The missing toe in the chat says, I think Faraday is eventually going to meet a tragic, heroic end. I guess we'll have to see about that. Who knows? He's one of those characters, though, that I would really hate to see die, in part because he's the guy who can kind of answer all these questions as to what exactly is going on. He's kind of the, I don't know if you want to call him a deus ex machina. He's the guy who is sort of the narrator who just sort of jumps in and explains everything to the audience who's watching the show. And he's kind of a cool character, if for no other reason, just for that. But I hope Faraday doesn't die. But you know, I mean, eventually at some point, he's probably not going to have much of a purpose in the show, and so that might happen eventually. I could see that. And Mr. Bill said, I'll throw this one out there. Faraday and Charlotte, Adam and Eve, the skeletons that Jack found on the island. Okay, maybe. I could see that. Why not? Faraday's a time traveler. Sure, anything's possible. All right. Kate Jack says, I think the baby is important. It was also in the training film at Comic-Con. Okay, are we talking about, I didn't see the Comic-Con training film. Was that, are we talking about Kate's, well, I should say Claire's baby, Aaron? Bailey Bear says, I missed the baby. I'll have to watch this episode again. The crying baby. Huh. Yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe I missed that at the beginning. Okay. I know what you're talking about. So when at the very beginning of the episode, before
Dr.
we
Chang.
Find out, right,
Dr.
right,
Chang's
right,
baby Chang Jr.
Right, right, yeah. So that baby was in the training film at Comic-Con. That's interesting. I totally wasn't aware of that at all. Well, I don't know the connection, but that is kind of interesting. Cool. Well, if anybody has any more info on that, we can get back to that. So let's see. The next couple of things in my notes here, I have down flash forward. So what this really means is that present or near future off of the island. So kind of getting back to the story of the Oceanic Six. Ben is talking to Jack, has a conversation with Jack, and asks, Did he, meaning, you know, John Locke, tell you what happened to them when the island moved? Jack says no, and Ben says, then I guess we'll never know. And that was kind of weird, because Ben, you know, wants to take John Locke or Jeremy Bentham back to the island, and it seems like, I don't know, a lot of people have thrown out the theory that that when John gets back to the island, he's going to come back to life. And it makes a lot of sense because the island, of course, you know, healed his legs and so forth. He's able to walk when he's on the island, but not when he's off the island. And there's also now, with this episode, we're kind of starting to get a little bit more hint into what's his name? Richard Alpert, and his connection with John Locke. Richard seems to know what's going to happen to John in the future, and we got kind of a little taste of perhaps of what's going to happen there. There was sort of a hint that maybe if John Locke left the island, that you know, there might be some chance for him to survive, even if he died. for him to maybe come back to the island and continue to live. There was also a little line, I can't find it in my notes at the moment. I think I've got it written down somewhere. We might get back to that. But I think there was a line where Ben said something to Jack about Locke, something about, I don't know, about coming back to life. I don't know. I'll see if I can find that. Anyway, anybody know what I'm talking about? I'm just making
things
up.
I think what happened is Richard Alpert said in order for said to Locke that he has a purpose, and that is to get the Losties back on the island. Part of that journey for him will be that he has to die. So you know, it could be that they take him into the future to take dead Locke back to the island or to the real world.
Okay, I can see that.
You know, it could be that, you know, Locke actually died in the real world, or they could have, I don't know where he died, but we need to know.
Right. Kind of getting back to the chat room, people are talking about the baby and this potential significance of the baby. let's see. The Diesel99 suggests that the baby is Annie, and Mr. Bill says probably more likely that it's Miles with two Asian parents, right? And let's see. Kate Jack says, look at the screen caps of the baby. I'm not positive it is Asian. Hard to tell. Mr. Bill says, me either, but it would seem right, but maybe adopted. Diesel says, maybe the baby was kidnapped from a crazy Asian woman whose science team crashed on the island. And let's see. The Missing Toe says, if Locke is resurrected by the island, it would fit with the show's faith and religious theme, Locke being the Jesus. Yeah, that's true, too. Locke has kind of been this figure who seems to be like sort of a savior to the island. In fact, I think at some point they pretty much called him that or something close to that. Obviously, Richard Alpert kind of views him in that way. Like, he's the guy who's the savior of the island. He's the one who's going to make things right. And I don't know, whatever that means in the context of the show to Richard Alpert. But.
Also, it was Richard Alpert said to John Locke, basically, take the bullet out and the island will do the rest.
True. That's a good point. okay, so moving on. After Ben says, then I guess we'll never know, meaning never know what happened to the people on the island when the island moved, then a caption reads 3 years earlier. Okay. So now we're going back to the island, I guess. I don't know if you want to call that the present, since this is now 3 years earlier. But anyway, so back on the island, there's a flash, and Locke suddenly finds himself all alone. He's by himself. And then we kind of cut to the group that Faraday is with. He's with Bernard and Juliet and Sawyer. And Faraday says, we must have been inside the radius. Which I don't know. It sounds like he's referring to the whatever it was, electromagnetic event or whatever it was that caused the island to apparently move. Faraday says we must have been inside the radius. In other words, even though they were on the boat, they were still. Which, by the way, is called Zodiac. I think I mentioned in a previous podcast that the boat is called Zodiac. When they were on that little raft, that they, according to Faraday, must have been inside the radius. So they were kind of included in that near the island area that got moved along with the island. Bernard says, there is no camp, kitchen tents, all food and water gone. Faraday says, it's not gone. And he says, before it happens again, camp is not gone, it hasn't been built yet. And so we get this hint that, okay, you know, we're back in time. That's what happened to the island, is that I don't know. Did the island move back in time, or did the island move to a different location and also incidentally it's at a different point in time as well? I'm not really clear on that, but so at the very least it appeared that the island moved from the perspective of the helicopter. So I guess it's fairly safe to say that the island moved. but apparently also either the island is moving in time, or at least the people on the island are moving through time. And in fact, I guess Faraday and Sawyer were kind of debating that too. Like it was kind of unclear. Oh, and Mormugil joined us, by the way, Jose. let's see here. Okay, we must have been inside the radius. Okay, so, in fact, that's the next note that I've got. Faraday says either they or the island are moving through time. Locke is unaccounted for, Sawyer points out. They cut to Locke, and he sees Yemi's plane crash, and then Ethan Rom comes and shoots him in the leg. and that was kind of funny. It was cool to get to see, you know, William Mapother again playing Ethan, and even though it was kind of a little brief cameo, it was kind of fun to get to see Locke interacting with Ethan and saying, "I know you, you're Ethan." And it was a little surprising to me that Ethan, even though John Locke knew who he was, he still shot him in the leg. That kind of surprised me a little bit, but I guess it was, I don't know, just to kind of put that part of the plot a little bit forward, that, you know, Richard Alpert was going to know about that later on. let's see. There's some talk in the chat. Bailey Bear says Sawyer and the others wanted answers from Faraday, but Faraday wouldn't tell them much in Lost fashion. Diesel says perhaps the record-skipping phenomenon is just another test that the island prepared for Locke to test his faith. let's see here. And Mr. Bill says Sawyer in his mind to Faraday, quit talking, quit talking, smarty pants, lab. All right. So moving on, flash forward, so or whatever. This is off the island in the near future, and we see Sun is flying to L.A., and she gives her passport. They scan it. And interestingly, if you're looking at a screen cap up on, I think it was losteastereggs.blogspot.com, they had a screen cap of the screen, and it's Adobe Photoshop, by the way, that they apparently scanned her passport into. I thought that was kind of weird, because I've never worked at an airport, but it seems kind of strange that they would be scanning, making a copy, a digital copy of her passport to keep on the computer or whatever. That didn't really make sense to me. Did anybody get anything out of that? Like, wonder what the deal was with that?
Seemed a little strange to me.
Yeah, it didn't really make a lot of sense. But the next thing after that was basically, it turns out that she had been, I guess, contracted by Charles Widmore to find Sun. And so they detain her, they lock her in a room, and it turns out that Charles Widmore was the one who had her detained. He makes reference to Sun's remark in a previous episode when she kind of confronts him outside of his office building. He refers to her remark about their common interests and asks what she meant by that. And Sun explains that they both want to kill Benjamin Linus, is what she says. And that's kind of where they leave off our view of that conversation. And so it seems apparent that, you know, Sun knows what Charles Widmore wants. It's kind of funny to me. I don't know. I mean, obviously Sun has, I guess, good reason to want Ben dead. I think Sun, if I remember right, it seems like she was kind of blaming Ben for Jim's death, if I'm not mistaken. And it's funny because later in the episode, she tells Kate, you know, I don't blame you. She doesn't blame Kate for Jim's death, which is weird, but yet she blames Ben. I don't quite get that. But in any case, Sun and Charles Widmore are on the same team. Let's see here. Kate Jack mentions, they asked the question of who sent the lawyers to get Aaron's blood sample. I'm not sure actually if I wrote that in my notes, so why don't we go ahead and get talk about that now. So Kate is at home with Aaron, and lawyers are sent, you know, well, they claim to be lawyers. They came to have, you know, subpoena, I guess, to get a blood sample from Aaron and from Kate to find out whether Aaron is really Kate's son. And the lawyers say that that their client, you know, wishes to remain anonymous. And so this brings up the question of who is the client, assuming, of course, that these guys are even telling the truth. You know, they may not be lawyers, but at least they're working for somebody. So who is their client? It seems to me, my thought during the episode was that perhaps Ben was the client because he's trying to get Kate to move out of her house, to kind of get antsy, to not have a home anymore, and so therefore maybe she'll be more likely to consider the possibility of going back to the island. Because Ben's got to do something drastic. He needs to get these people back to the island. And obviously there's no way that Kate ever wants to go back to the island. So maybe this is a way to kind of get that spark of inspiration in Kate's mind that maybe it wouldn't be so bad because now they don't have their house anymore. They can't stay at the same place. let's see. Any thoughts on that? What do you think about that, James?
Oh, it could be. I was thinking maybe perhaps it's Kate's mom.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting theory.
She wants to see her grandson, and she may, you know, I don't know. It could be a possibility.
Right. So Kate's mom is the client. Yeah, I could see that because, Kate, if I remember right, and it's been a long time since I've seen that episode, but didn't Kate tell her mom? She kind of denied her mom the right to see her, you know, supposed grandson. Am I right? And that's, Eggtown. There you go. Thanks, Diesel. So
it would be horrible if it was Jack. You know, Jack's way of telling her he knows something. But it's not to me unless I missed something. You know, has Jack told Kate that he knows about Aaron?
Say it again.
I don't think that Jack has told Kate that he knows about the history of Aaron. And
well,
remember with the mother, Aaron's mother, and meeting her at the father's funeral and the whole bit.
Right. Yeah. I'm not really sure. Kate was there, but, and Diesel's mentioning in the chat, Kate witnessed it. She saw the mother confess to Jack, but, Kate Jack says the writer said Jack is keeping the secret.
Yeah, no, it couldn't be Jack sending the lawyers. I think it was just simply either Ben or Kate's mom. I don't know.
So, for anyone who might be confused at this point, we're talking about when at Christian Shepherd's funeral. This was in a flash forward after the Oceanic Six are back. Kate is there with Aaron, and Claire's mom was there at the funeral, and she made a comment that Claire was on the plane, asked if Jack, you know, knew who Claire was or something to that effect. And then as she was walking out, you know, she made a comment about Kate's baby to Kate. But so we as the audience know that I wonder if Jack knew. Refresh my memory. Does Jack know at this point that Kate is his half, or I mean not that Kate, that Claire is his half sister?
I would say yes.
Okay.
He put two and two together and realizes that
his father had
a baby with this woman.
True, true. Yeah, that's right. It would be because of that scene. That's how he knew that Claire was his half sister. That's right. Okay. Let's see here. So getting back to my notes, see where I am here. Son talked to Charles Widmore. They both want to kill Benjamin Linus. The next thing we see in a flash forward is Saeed and Hurley are going to a place that they call the Safe House. Was there a previous mention of the safe house? Because that seems kind of out of the blue to me. I don't recall that. Anybody else remember the safe house? Well, apparently there were two people who were inside who were trying to kill them. Mormagill says every spy has a safe house. Oh, of course. Well, and it did seem to be Saeed's place because there was that little piece of duct tape on the door that was broken when Saeed, you know, was checking to see if anybody had entered the house, which, by the way, I just thought that was just ridiculous, if I can rant a little bit, because it's a piece of duct tape. It's shiny, you know, silver duct tape. And not only that, but it looks like it had been cut. It didn't just tear, and it didn't just, you know, come, you know, unglued from the door frame when somebody opened the door. It looks like it had been cut. So, I don't know. That was kind of lame, but whatever. That was a prop thing, I guess. Anyway, so that's what, I guess it's Saeed's safe house. It's like where he, I don't know, lived, or that was a safe place to go, I guess. Maybe that was some place that he and Ben had designated or something as a safe house. I don't know. In any case, at this point, it seems that Saeed and Ben have kind of had a falling out. And anyway, there's a couple of people inside who try to kill them. Saeed got them first, but they trank Saeed, so he passes out. And while Hurley is kind of standing outside while Saeed is battling guy number two, a bunch of people see this dead body, you know, that has fallen to the ground, or, you know, this guy has fallen to the ground. There's a dead body on the ground. They see Hurley, who has blood on his shirt, and he, for some reason, I mean, why would you do this? But Hurley picks up the gun that's on the ground, or on the balcony there where he's standing, the walkway, I guess. And so he's got this gun in his hand, and this guy, like, pulls out his cell phone and snaps a picture of Hurley with this gun with blood on his shirt, and then the guy's run off. And of course, later in the episode, when Hurley is in the at the gas station and he looks up at the TV, there's this, like, you know, really high quality picture of Hurley holding the gun. It totally doesn't look like it was taken on somebody's little cell phone they just flipped out of their pocket. But I thought that was kind of funny too. But another prop thing. anyway, so let's see here. So they get a picture of him after he picks up the first assailant's gun. Let's see here. Bailey asks, was that an apartment or a motel? I don't know. I thought it looked more like a motel. Anyone else have any different thoughts on that?
Motel.
Yeah, Freddie Mac says they shot a dart into Saeed. That's what I was referring to, like a tranquilizer dart. Mormagill says it looks like a motel. I thought it looked like one, too. Well, although Mr. Bill points out a hotel with a dishwasher, yeah, that's true. And you don't really see that very often. I've never seen a hotel or motel that has a dishwasher in the room. So maybe those were apartments. That's a good point. Anyway, moving on. Back on the island, I'm just going to call this the present. Charlotte wondered if Widmore was looking for them. So she, you know, clearly is fully aware of the situation with Ben and Widmore kind of battling for, you know, looking for the island. And what's his name? The smart aleck guy who, Miles, there we go, Miles Straum. I was thinking Maelstrom. Anyway, so Miles says that, well, you know, he's been looking for the island all these years, and he still hasn't found it. What makes you think he's going to find it now, or something to that effect? Dan explains a little bit later to Sawyer. Sawyer, you know, there's a flash, and they're standing outside of the remains of the Swan Hatch, the Swan Station, and then there's a flash, and all of a sudden, there's no more crater in the ground anymore. And so Sawyer's like, okay, I'm going in there. I'm going to get some supplies. We need some food and whatever else. There's a whole bunch of stuff in Hatch. And, of course, at this point, we know that somebody is this is before Locke discovered the Hatch. So somebody's in there. And at least it's Desmond. We don't know how far back in time this is. It could have just as easily been Kelvin and Rudzinski or something at that point. But it turned out that Desmond was in the Hatch. we find out a little bit later. Dan says to Sawyer, you can't change anything. He basically is trying to explain the rules of time travel and how you can't try to change the past if you're jumping back to the past. I don't know. Hasn't that kind of been disproven? Because it seemed like there was something in one of the episodes where something did change. Right. It goes more McGill says self-correcting. It gets back to Ms. Hawking, you know, talking to Desmond about how the universe course corrects and all that kind of stuff. So basically, Daniel Faraday is saying the same thing that Ms. Hawking was saying, that the universe has a way of course correcting. It has to fix itself because there's only a certain path that things are supposed to take. Flashes before your eyes. Man, Diesel's good with the episode names. Okay, so Dan tells Sawyer you can't change anything. Sawyer says, then who can stop it? And they cut to Locke. So, of course, that means that Locke is the one who can stop it, who can stop these flashes from happening, I guess, is what they're referring to. And let's see. Richard Alpert sees Locke, knows exactly who he is, walks up to John Locke and immediately, you know, pulls out a first aid kit and starts, you know, bandaging up his wound and basically says, I don't have a lot of time to explain, so just, you know, hear me out here. He says, the only way to save the island, John, is to get your people back here. They're already home, so you have to convince them to come back. And then he says after that, you're going to have to die, John. So this is the thing that makes me think that that John is going to come back to life when he gets back to the island. That's just my theory. It seems to make sense to me, again, with the whole healing and all that kind of stuff. The island probably still has a purpose for John. At the very least, well, I guess maybe it could be that is John's purpose, that by dying, it sort of makes it easier for them to be able to get him back to the island for some reason. I don't know. And ultimately, they all come back to the island as a consequence of whatever it was that John or Jeremy Bentham did. We still haven't seen anything at all of Jeremy Bentham's life. You know, I should say, Locke, after he gets off the island, we don't know what happens to him before he winds up in the casket. And so I imagine that season 5 is going to explore that quite a bit. We're probably going to find out what's going on with Jeremy Bentham, why he's got this different name, all that kind of stuff. let's see. Feel free to jump in any time if you've got any other thoughts, James.
Okay, sure.
So so there's another flash. John is back in the past where Yemi's plane is, again, on the top of the cliff. And we go to another scene where Sawyer, Juliet, et cetera, they're back outside the hatch. It hasn't been found by Locke yet. This is when they discover that Charlotte's nose is bleeding, and Dan sort of panics a little bit, and then kind of, you know, acts like nothing's wrong. Charlotte and the others kind of go back to the beach, and Dan is still there, and he looks up something in the journal. Which at first I thought he was looking up something related to Charlotte, but I guess he had been kind of waiting for everyone else to leave so that he could confront Desmond. He looks up something in the journal. He knocks on the hatch back door again. Desmond comes out, you know, in his full suit, of course, because he still thinks that, you know, that there's a sickness outside of the hatch. And I kind of wonder what Desmond would have thought at that point, by the way, because here you've got somebody who's he doesn't appear to be sick at all, who's outside the hatch, who knows, you know, Desmond's name and starts, you know, giving him instructions. This whole thing is very strange. I mean, Dan just gets finished saying you can't go and change the past, and then now he's going back to the past, you know, to interfere with the past by telling Desmond that, you know, that he needs to go to Oxford and so forth. And so it's kind of funny. Anyway, so the next thing we see is after that is that Desmond wakes up. This is in the future again, and the end of the first part of the premiere episode. And Penny says to Desmond, "You've been off the island for 3 years now. So now we know where this is taking place, where Desmond, you know, woke up. So this is 3 years after the island. So I guess." This is definitely a flash forward. And Desmond says, it wasn't a dream, Pen, it was a memory. And the next thing you know, he says that they're going to Oxford. It turns out they're on a boat, and he's, I guess, setting sail for Oxford. And so Desmond, because of Dan Faraday's interference with the past, all of a sudden, this memory pops into Desmond's head 3 years later in the future, which is just weird. But I guess that's how they do time travel in fiction. But anyway, so Desmond suddenly wakes up 3 years later with a memory, and now he knows that he's got to go to Oxford. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Dan Faraday said that it was his mother who was going to be the one that Desmond needed to go talk to. Is that correct?
Yeah, and she said her name is and then we...
Right, exactly. It cuts off there. So I'm kind of curious. I don't know if it's just kind of a suspenseful thing.
Unanswered questions.
Is this something that we're going to find out later and be surprised about? Or is this going to be... does it have? There's no surprise to it at all, and it's going to turn out that, you know, Desmond doesn't know who he's looking for. And a couple of people in the chat are saying the exact same thing that I thought when at the end of the episode. Is Ms. Hawking his mother? Natalie in Seattle says I think it's Ms. Hawking, and I totally thought that at the very end of the episode, you see somebody writing on the chalkboard. And you know, it looks, you know, where I was kind of assuming at that point, okay, this is Dan's mom. And a few, you know, a moment later, we see that it's Ms. Hawking. And so that's totally the question that was in my mind, too. I'm like, okay, wait a minute. So they're obviously making us think that there's a connection to Dan Faraday with the whole writing on the chalkboard thing and
yeah.
Figuring out the physics and time and travel and all that kind of stuff. And it totally makes sense from that view, because now it pulls together. Ms. Hawking said the same things to Desmond that Dan Faraday was saying to Sawyer in this episode, and so it makes perfect sense that Ms. Hawking is going to turn out to be Dan Faraday's mother. Why she has a different last name, I don't know, but you know, any number of reasons. But I think it makes absolute sense that. That Ms. Hawking is going to turn out to be Dan Faraday's mother. Now here's where it really gets interesting, because Ms. Hawking is working with Ben, and you know, and the crew, you know, Dan and his crew came to the island via Charles Widmore, right? So that could turn out to be a problem, that Desmond is going to go talk to Ms. Hawking, because that could, well, I don't know. I mean, basically, it's going to be giving Ben Lydus information. So Ben's may be able to use that somehow. I don't know. But I don't know. Anybody have any thoughts? Like, what is going to be the connection, or what's going to be the purpose of Desmond talking to presumably Ms. Hawking? Anybody have any thoughts on that? I guess that's going to have to be one of those mysteries that will kind of unfold itself over time. But in any case, I'm pretty convinced that we're gonna find out that Ms. Hawking is Dan's mother. So a great theory. Everyone who also thought that, I think we're right on with that. Okay, so back in the flash forward. This is what I just said. This is the end of the first half of the premiere. Penny says, you've been off the island for 3 years now. Dad says it wasn't a dream. It was a memory. They're going to Oxford. Okay, so this starts part two. It starts out saying 3 years ago. And so this is another flashback that the episode starts out with. And it's a flashback to the not-too-distant past. Jack is on the boat with the other members of the Oceanic Six, and they're kind of figuring out their story. They're figuring out the lie that they're going to tell. Curly tries to talk them out of lying and says, you know, we've got to tell the truth. And Saeed says, well, we can't. I mean, you know, basically, there's no possible way that anybody can believe them, for one thing, but they've got to protect the people who are on the island from Charles Widmore as well. And Curly's not comfortable with this whole idea of lying, and he tells Saeed, you know, if you're ever in trouble, you know, there's going to come a day when you're going to need me to do something for you, and I'm not going to be there for you. And then it cuts to the flash forward, where Hurley is trying to wake up Saeed. You know, he is still passed out, and so obviously Hurley changed his mind. He seems to be very impressionable and easy to change his mind on things. So Hurley is trying to take Saeed away, you know, puts him in a car, and he's driving away. He's running into trash cans and everything as he's trying to, like, wake up Saeed. He's driving recklessly, and all of a sudden this cop car, you know, pulls up behind him, and it's like, oh, great. And, of course, Hurley pulls over, and who is the cop? Anna Lucia is the one who pulls him over. And which is just totally mind-blowing, because at this point we're going, okay, wait a minute. Is Anna Lucia alive? At least that's what I was thinking. I'm like, what the heck is going on here? And so Anna Lucia tells Hurley, what if I were real? And so at that point we're like, oh, okay. This is dead Anna Lucia manifesting herself to Hurley, just like Charlie has done. And so forth. So this is Anna Lucia is dead. This is all in Hurley's mind, apparently. And so she says, "What if I were real?" She says Hurley needs new clothes, a safe place, someone that you trust. Stay away from cops. Don't get arrested. And then the last thing she says is, "Oh yeah, Libby says hi," which is kind of cool. But now one of those things that, as I'm kind of reviewing the notes live here, one of the things she says is stay away from cops. Now that directly contradicts something that Saeed had instructed Hurley, which was, if you ever see Benjamin Linus again, you know, do exactly the opposite of what he tells you to do. That's what, so later in the episode, Hurley's got this sort of dilemma. Does he go with what Saeed, his trusted friend, you know, counseled him, or does he go with what Anna Lucia counseled him? And apparently by that point in the episode, he had forgotten what Anna Lucia said, because he didn't stay away from the cops, and he decided to take Saeed's advice and do the opposite of what Ben tells him to do. So now, again, we'll get back to that, but that really puts Ben in a pickle, because now he's got to, I don't know, break Hurley out of prison or whatever. So that's kind of crazy that all that's going on. And an interesting point anyway, that normally it seems like the apparitions, these, you know, people who appear to Hurley and kind of give him instructions, these dead people that appear to Hurley, it seems like they usually give him pretty good advice, or at least, you know, it sort of seems that way, perhaps. And so, you know, what are going to be the consequences for Hurley for not taking Anna Lucia's advice and instead taking Saeed's, you know, advice from his limited perspective? So we'll, I'm sure, see that in the next couple episodes. Moore McGill and Natalie in Seattle are talking about the 70 hours thing, which we'll get to that at the end, kind of the recap of the episode, but... Why does Ben only have 70 hours? we don't know. We don't really know exactly, but it seems that there's going to be some sort of event. This is my take on it, that there's going to be some sort of event that will make it possible for them to all get back to the islands. But I'm assuming that they all have to be in the same place at the same time when this event happens. And as the Missing Toast says, that was the calculation that Hawking figured out, the event window. So we'll get back to that. So in the back on the island, we meet Neil Froger. This is the first time that he's been on the regular show. He was on one of the what do you call them, the Mobisode, with Hurley. He for anyone who may not remember, Neil Froger is the guy who's been mentioned on the official Lost podcast as somebody who would show up on the show eventually, and then he only showed up in a Mobisode until now, and then of course Neil Froger dies later in the episode. He had been mentioned by Bernard, by the way, too, in SOS. Bernard mentions that there was a guy who used to sell frozen yogurt or something like that. And anyway, so that's Neil, and Sawyer's nickname for him is Froger. Presumably Froger is not really his last name, but anyway, Neil Froger shows up on this episode. Let's see. Natalie in Seattle says he's this season's Dr. Arst. He's the guy who shows up briefly for a couple of episodes and has some purpose in the show, and then he dies. He gets killed, basically. All right. So, flash forward. Ben flushes Jack's pills, tells Jack to pack anything he wants because he's never coming back. In another scene, Kate is about to call Jack. She's got his number pulled up on her cell phone, and then she decides against it at the last minute. And then right after that, somebody calls her. We find out a little bit later that it's Sun, and that was a surprise to me. It said restricted number, of course, so that we didn't, that was spoiled for us at that point in the episode. And I was a little bit surprised about that. The next sequentially in the sequence of events is that Hurley takes Saeed to his dad's house, and then getting back to the Kate and Sun thing. Kate is with Aaron, and Kate tells Aaron that they need to go to 431, and of course, rather than saying 31, and 3 plus 1, of course, is 4, which is one of the numbers. So that's at least one number reference on the episode. Potentially. Let's see, and then so we find out at that point that was who Kate went to see with Sun. They have this conversation. We talked a little bit about it earlier where Sun says she doesn't blame Kate, but it's going to be interesting to see what's going on here, because it seems that Sun is trying to get Kate as her ally, and we know that Sun is allied with Charles Widmore. And yet Ben needs to get Kate and Sun back to the island. And so that'll be really interesting to see whether Ben can pull that off. And if so, how in the world he's going to pull that off. Any other thoughts on the Kate and Sun conversation, anybody?
Seemed a little strange to me.
Sorry, I mean, go ahead,
Jim. It seemed a little strange to me. I think everyone's, trusts Sun. She's a little jaded because of her loss. Losing her husband, she, I think, is being sneaky and underhanded, and we first saw that come out in her character when she came back from Oceanic, took over her father's company, and now has this debt to settle.
Right. Yeah, a lot of people in the chat are pointing out, too, that it seems like Sun is kind of acting a little bit weird. I don't know. I mean, I guess there could be different reasons or even different takes on that. But this is hilarious, by the way. Mr. Bill pointed out in the chat that that Froger's death was totally a red shirt moment. And I looked at the screen caps just to confirm, and sure enough, Neil was wearing a red shirt. That's totally hilarious. Another red shirt moment. Also, the missing toe pointed out in the chat, the episode opened with the clock turning to 8:15, too. That's true. So a couple of numbers references there. Let's see. The missing toe also says Sun seems to have something else on her agenda besides revenge on Ben. I was kind of wondering that too. It just seems, I don't know. Like, I'm not really sure what Sun's agenda is with Kate. Why did she call it Kate? That is totally unclear to me at this point.
If I was Sun, having your own, like, you know, being a mother and having your own child, and then her looking at Kate in her glorious happy days away from, you know, with her own baby, she knows it's not her baby, and I think there's some sort of resentment, the fact that Kate's pretending. It's more than just the lie they all agreed to. She's just enjoying having that child and has absolutely no intention of going back to the island and giving the child back to Claire, if Claire, in fact, is still around.
Yeah, and you know, that also brings up another point, too, because speaking of their children, Sun mentions that Ji-Yeon is, which is her son. Is that right? Sun, right? Sun. Anyway, so Ji-Yeon is with, I think Sun said, with her mom. Daughter? Okay, Natalie in Seattle says daughter. Okay.
Daughter.
Sorry, I get confused. It kind of goes back to, I can't remember if it was Steve or Matt. One of the guys from the Smokehash was on my live show, and we were talking about how the name Ji-Yeon was like a male name, and then it turned out that, I guess, whatever the source for that information was not correct, and it turned out that they did have a daughter. So that's why I was confused. Anyway, so Sun's daughter, I'm sorry, not Sun's son. Let's see here. Mormon Gill says, why doesn't Sun have a more recent pic of her kid? Should be 2 to 3 years old. Yeah, that's an interesting point, too, because obviously some time has passed now. I mean, it looks like we're back 3 years in the future now, and, you know, based on kind of Aaron's age and, you know, how well he talks and things like that. And so that's a good point, because we don't have, you know, Sun doesn't produce a 2 to 3 year old, you know, picture of her child. So that is kind of weird. Good point. I hadn't really thought about that at all. Let's see where we are here. So Ferger was a red shirt. Let's see here. Kate went to the floor 3-1 to see Sun. Okay. The next thing that I've got down in my notes is that Ben has an ally in this meat shop. What do you call it? A butcher shop. And correct me if I'm wrong. I think Ben said her name was June, J-U-N-E. Is that right? I didn't quite catch that. Unfortunately, I just have, you know, standard deaf, you know, over the airwaves TV, and so a lot of times I miss names and little things like that. It sounded like you might have called her June. Jill, Natalie in Seattle says, something like that. And so this woman is apparently working with Ben, and Kate Jack also says that it was Jill. So, okay, so Jill, let me put that in my notes here. So Jill. Jill is going to watch Locke's body. She knows all about Jack, etc. And it's kind of interesting. She knows the whole deal about how they've got to get back to the island and everything. So we have no idea what the kind of background is on Jill, how she's connected with Ben. So we'll see whether they explore that in a future episode. Let's see here. Okay, so the next thing I've got in my notes, we're back on the island. Charlotte has a headache. She can't remember her mom's maiden name. So more of these symptoms that seem to have something to do with the time traveling and not being, not handling it well. At least that's my take on it. And I'm assuming that's what Dan Faraday is thinking too, when he seems concerned about it. Neil Froger gets hit with a flaming arrow, and of course, he's dead. Total red shirt moment. Mr. Bill, by the way, says, that wasn't me who saw that, but, I'm giving Mr. Bill credit for pointing that out on my show anyway. So that was very cool to notice that. Flash forward. So Hurley's dad takes Saeed to Jack because Hurley feels that, Saeed can't go to a hospital because it'll be just like in, what did he say, The Godfather or something like that. They'll smother him to death, we can't risk taking him out in public. And so he tells Hurley's, Hurley tells his dad to take Saeed to Jack. And so Jack then takes Saeed to the hospital after all. I guess that's where Jack was going to have the equipment. And by the way, Hurley's dad mentions to Jack that he totally doesn't trust Jack and that he doesn't think that Jack has Hurley's best interests at heart. We cut to Hurley talking with his mom, and he kind of comes clean to her and kind of just blurts out in, this long run-on sentence, like all the things that are, happened on the island, and, there's a smoke monster, and there were these people we called the Others, and all this stuff, and he says the only thing basically that was true in that whole story was that there ended up being six of us at the end. And Hurley's mom just, Carmen looks totally confused, but she says that she doesn't have any idea what he's talking about, but that she believes him. And Natalie in Seattle says, I love that she believes him. And I was actually, to be honest, kind of wondering, is she for real? Like, does she really believe Hurley at this point? But I guess only a mother could believe that kind of a story. But obviously Hurley believed it, and so I guess that's, so Carmen believed that he wasn't lying anyway. And Hurley says that they shouldn't have lied. And, of course, the problem with them not lying is that, nobody would ever believe that whole story. Even if they left out the smoke monster and everything else, too much of the story just wouldn't fit. It wouldn't make sense to anybody. Anyway, but he firmly believes that they shouldn't have lied. Getting back to the island, Sawyer and Juliet are captured. Now, this is an interesting point because I want to know what other people's take on this is. It looked to me like the people that captured Sawyer and Juliet might be from the Dharma Initiative. They had, like, name tags on. Did anybody else have any other thoughts on that?
Well, it could be Widmore's people coming in to keep watch on Dharma, and whenever he goes there, he brings his army brats. It could be a different point in time, just before Dharma. Or just as when Dharma got there, Dharma was being protected by an army presence, because at that time there were other people, perhaps, whether they're the four-toed dudes or not, there were possibly someone else on the island, another threat, so hence the army.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that. That's interesting. Let's see. I'm trying to find some screenshots of what they looked like. The missing toe says they looked like old military. Kate Jack points out they had an accent, and guesses that maybe they're related to Widmore. The missing toe says maybe like World War I or World War II era they kind of looked like. Let's see. Mormigil says I don't think Widmore was there yet. Aren't they between Desmond Landing and a September 2004 plane crash? Well, at this point, between there. So we don't really have any idea where we are in time with those people.
I think it was close. I don't think it was World War. It's interesting because the cost of what they were wearing did look like World War II or World War I, it looked older looking uniform, or perhaps it just could have been something that, you know, doesn't look like an American military uniform. It could be, you know, British or, you know, some, you know, another country.
Right.
I think it's close in time.
It's been so long since I've done this. I'm totally blanking out on what the other screen cap site that I usually go to is. I was looking at losteastereggs.blogspot.com, which is one of Dark UFO's sites, and I'm trying to pull up Dark Arst's Lost Easter Eggs page, and it's not loading at the moment for me. There's another, I can't think of what it was. Let's see, screenshots and Easter eggs. I'm going to find it. Hang on just a sec here. All the stuff from my recent episodes looks like it comes from Dark UFO.
The dodi.blogspot.com, K-Jack.
Okay. Okay, yeah, theirs is good. The other one that I usually go to is lost.qubit.net, and let me check out what they've got here. Oh, by the way, they also confirmed that's Jill the Butcher, so I misheard that. It's Jill. Let's just see here. They've got a whole bunch of screen caps, it looks like, but it's probably going to take me a while to kind of dig through those. If anyone else wants to look at that, it's lost.cubitqubit.net. Maybe we can kind of dig through those and see if we can figure out. There's got to be a picture in there somewhere. Oh, by the way, one of the screenshots here points out that Hurley's dad was watching Exposé, which, of course, was the show that that Nikki was on, which is kind of funny. Okay, well, here's one screen grab. I don't see – now, of course, this is in the dark and all that, but I don't see a Dharma logo on the guy's shirt. The name is Jones. He's the guy, if I remember right, who was kind of the leader, seemed like, who was talking to them, said that they needed to cut off Juliet's hand. The name that's on his jacket is Jones, and I don't see a Dharma logo. And it also it looks like it's more of a green outfit. Again, it's kind of dark at night and all that kind of stuff. But it looks like it's a dark green, like again, could be military outfit. And it does say Jones on his shirt, but I don't see a Dharma logo. Let's see, anybody else? Looking at any other screen caps. I'm just trying to see if I can find any others. Now their site is having issues too. Everybody's taking all these sites offline, hitting them too hard because Lost is over. Our first premiere episode is over, so everyone's like digging through all the sites to try to like take a look at Easter eggs and things. Okay, let's see. The Missing Toe has an idea. Perhaps Amelia Earhart time for the military guys, another tie-in from earlier seasons. That's interesting.
I was thinking too.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say you like that idea. What do you think about that? About the whole Amelia Earhart tie-in?
Oh, that would be great if they could. You know, maybe if that's in fact what it is, and it could just be a little nod to that. But it'd be nice if it was a more solid kind of definite, you know, thing that we can look at. I do think that the presence of the army, I was thinking, is interesting because I mentioned this earlier this evening that Anna Lucia had a knife that she had found when she was with the others after another 48 days. She had noticed the knife was army issue knife.
Okay.
I think that would suggest that they were there, well, not too long ago.
Okay.
Which would tie into this, the army being, you know, not from, you know, World War II.
Well, but doesn't Anna Lucia say that, was it Anna Lucia or Goodwin that said something about, what was the name of the group? It wasn't the Peace Corps.
In that scene, that was two seasons ago, he had a comment about Anna Lucia pointing out about the knife, I can't remember exactly what it was, but he didn't want to draw too much. It didn't seem that he wanted to make too much of a big deal about it.
It seems like they did answer that where the knife came from or something like that. Let me see if I can pull it up on Lostpedia.
Sometimes, as they say, you know, people have all these great ideas, and Ben said this, Ben said that, but then, you know, there's someone else that will say Ben is a liar. So Goodwin could be lying as well, you know, to protect group.
Okay. Okay, here's what Lostpedia says. Lostpedia.com, or I noticed that their URL redirects to lostpedia.wikia.com. I just kind of started checking out their new site recently. The other's knife is what it's called in on Lostpedia. If you do a search for knife, you'll find it. If you scroll down, other's knife is what they call it. And it says, the other 48 days, Anna Lucia finds a U.S. Army knife on one of the others. She believes it to be around 20 years old. This knife resembled a knife owned by Kelvin Inman. So if it's 20 years old, you know, maybe it could be Kelvin's knife. Maybe it could be a knife that's related to these, you know, army folks that are on the island. I don't know, but they, again, someone pointed out that they don't have like a United States accent, which doesn't necessarily mean anything. But you know, Anna Lucia says that this is a U.S. Army knife. Let's see here. This, in fact, oh, they've even got a screenshot on Lostpedia. It does say U.S. Army on it, so that's definitely where that knife came from. So who knows? I'm not sure. I mean, you know, it's possible. I mean, if the U.S. Army has had a presence on the island at some point, or somebody from the Army has, then I guess it stands to reason that some other Army people from another Army have been on the island too. I mean, you've got mercenaries that Charles Woodmore sent there who were kind of ex-military and all that kind of stuff. So
it's a direct suggestion, because Anna Lucia said specifically, I think she said, why is a U.S. Army knife doing on this island? I think something to that effect. I mean, she made a point of it.
Right. Well, and like I said, the screen grab does definitely say it's show that it says U.S. Army on the knife. So anyway, let's you know, I don't know if we have too much more we can say about that, but so we don't know who these people are. Maybe they're people from some kind of army. That sort of seems to be the case. At first, I thought maybe Dharma Initiative, and their uniforms didn't look quite right. But looking at the one screen cap that I've been able to pull up, there's definitely not any obvious Dharma logo on there. Let's see, screen caps. I'm trying to pull up Doc Arst's screen caps too. Has anybody else looked at any screen caps of the Army guys? Well, anyway, if you want to, you can, but we need to kind of move the podcast episode along. So, flash forward. We're getting close to the end now. There's a flash forward where Jack, you know, at the hospital, Jack hooks up Saeed to a breeding machine. He injects him with something, I believe, and then sort of takes his vitals, and he seems to be upset about something. And then suddenly Saeed wakes up and starts strangling Jack until he realizes who it is. And then, let's see, Ben tries to talk Hurley into going with him. He just shows up at Hurley's parents' house and starts talking to Hurley and says, look, you know, I know the police are out front. You know, I'm parked out back. You can just come with me. And it's cool, you know. I know that Jack and Saeed are together. You know, how would I know that if Saeed wasn't working with me and that, all that stuff? So basically, Hurley doesn't trust him. And he decides to take Saeed's advice over dead Anna Lucia's. And so he runs out front, turns himself into the police, and says, I killed all four of them, or three of them, or however many I killed. So he turns himself in, and he's smiling and all happy about it. And Ben looks just like, what am I going to do now? So that'll be interesting to see what Ben can do about that. In the present or whatever, wherever we are on the island, past, I guess. But Locke comes and rescues Sawyer and Juliet, so she doesn't get her hand chopped off. And Locke seems to be getting around just fine now, so the island must have healed his leg pretty well by this point already. And then we get our last flash forward of the episode. Miss Hawking is, again, we don't know it's Miss Hawking at first. There's a person making calculations on a chalkboard and then looks at a computer screen, and the computer screen says event window determined. And there's a whole bunch of intersecting lines in several places on this map on the screen. I'm sure there will be screen caps of this on various sites too. But so a whole bunch of intersecting lines that all intersect in the same spot. So I guess whatever this, she's had some sort of machine going in addition to the computer, and I guess they're sort of calculating points where I'm assuming they might be able to jump through space or time, or time and space, I guess, is what they would have to do. So she figures out this event window, and she says to Ben, "You have 70 hours." And she says that if Ben can't get them all back, then God help us all. So that's her last quote from the episode. And that's pretty much where they leave us. So, let's see. So again, kind of, we're left wondering whether Miss Hawking is Dan Faraday's mom, and whether it's going to be a problem that they're on two different sides, that Miss Hawking is clearly on Ben's side, and Dan Faraday is employed by Charles Widmore. So, you know, who knows whether that's going to turn out to be some sort of a problem. And will Desmond figure out that Ms. Hawking is Dan's mom and all this kind of stuff? So we'll just have to see. Okay. Any other thoughts? James, any other comments or thoughts from the episode? James, you mentioned in the chat, looks like each time the island shifted, she tracked its location. Okay, so that maybe that's what all those intersecting lines were, where maybe those were points where the island had been at some point in time. Is that yeah, kind of what your theory is?
Yeah, I think that she was looking at the computer screen, and on the computer screen there were other lines that were made that echo from, you know, what she was drawing on the ground with the chalk. And I think it shifted. There's about four or five of them, and the island shifted, what, four or five times? So I think, is there a way she could track that and map it out? So that could have shown the island's actual location. That was a world map, was it not?
Yeah, I believe so.
So the island seemed to be shifting within the same, I guess, was that, I don't know, between two oceans? I don't even know, but it looked like a great distance on the globe.
Right. There were definitely a lot of different points all over the map. Where these intersecting lines were. Let's see. We've got a question going in the chat as to what that thing was that was behind Ms. Hawking when she was sitting at the computer. There was something that kept sort of passing by, like close to the camera, and I wasn't really sure what that was. Natalie in Seattle and Mr. Bill both said that they thought it looked like a pendulum, maybe. But
it was the pendulum that was drawing the chalk on the at the bottom of the pendulum. There's a big block. There's chalk or something on it. Each time it went on the floor, it made a mark. So as it somehow was, you know, slowly turning by force of, I don't know, of magnetic force, or as it swings, you know, it tracks the movement somehow of space and time or something. But the pendulum was making the marks on the floor somehow. This seemed ridiculous, a little Hollywood to me, but somehow the pendulum was, you know, connected to the computer.
Right. Definitely the impression that I got too. Okay, and let's see. Kate Jack just linked to Dark UFO screen caps, and so yeah, it looks like it was chalk drawings on the floor, chalk or something like that. So, okay, so pendulum. That's interesting. They don't, it doesn't look like they've got any really good shots. There's one where you can kind of, I guess you can kind of see something swinging, but it's hard to get just a screenshot of that. It might be better to get, like, a video. But basically, it did look like a pendulum, like, especially looking at the screenshot. You can kind of see it's going at an angle. And what I kind of assumed, kind of along the lines of what James was saying, was that somehow this thing was connected with the computer. And so it's, you know, this pendulum or whatever this is drawing all these lines on the ground that are all intersecting at, you know, the same point, kind of making star patterns on the floor. And then if you look at the screen grabs from the computer screen, where it says event window determined, there are a whole bunch of spots, and yes, it is a map of the whole Earth. And there's a whole bunch of different places where there are these intersecting lines and sort of in star patterns across the globe. And it's only, I'm not really sure, but it looks like they're all over the ocean somewhere. Although, you know, this is a single color display. It's like, you know, green or, you know, or off black. You know, if any of these places did show up over the top of a landmass, I guess they either wouldn't show up or maybe they'd show up in black. I don't know. But that's another thing that sort of maybe hints that this is referring to the location of an island, since an island can't, you know, really exist on top of a landmass. So I don't know. Hopefully, let's see, I'll try to put that particular link where you can find all those screenshots in the show notes. They're kind of low res, actually. Hopefully they'll post higher quality pictures later. And I guess the source on that was the ODI's website. The-ODI.blogspot.com is that site. Let's see, Mormigil says, In real life, the pendulum appears to spin, but momentum keeps it on the same axis while the Earth. There's the big pendulum at Griffith Observatory in Los Angeles, and over a period of 24 hours, the pendulum axis. I'm only getting part of the comments. They're cutting off there, but let's see. Well, anyway, so there's the pendulum. And that pretty much brings us to the end of this episode, unless anyone else has got any other things they want to point out. Okay, why don't we go ahead and get into the preview for next week? So, again, I haven't looked at any spoilers, unless you consider the preview for next week to be a spoiler. I'll just tell you my observations, and if anyone else has any other observations from the preview, you know, things that I may have missed, because, you know, I try to just watch it as intently as possible and then just sort of, you know, brain dump all of my thoughts, you know, everything I can remember from it, kind of write it down right after I see it. So I may have missed some things. These are the things that that I saw in the preview for next week. Desmond tells Penny that he needs to go back to the island, which, you know, that it's not really too much of a surprise. He was already going to Oxford, and so now I guess in the next episode, potentially an upcoming episode, because sometimes I've noticed that they do that with the previews. They actually tend to sort of preview a couple of episodes in the future, so we'll see. But in the next episode or one of the next episodes, Desmond's going to tell Penny that he needs to go back to the island. Jack and Ben try to talk Kate into going back. That will presumably be in the next episode. Locke says to Sawyer, you want her to come back, don't you? Or something to that effect, referring to Kate, presumably. So Locke is trying to convince Sawyer that it's a good thing for Kate to come back to the island. I guess at that point, Locke is planning to get off the island to be able to, you know, coerce the other people into coming back. And let's see, Locke also asked Richard Alpert how to get off the island in one of the clips. And there's more of the army people with the guns. So even though Locke took out the, whatever, two or three people that were there that were holding Juliet and Sawyer hostage, apparently there are more army people on the island. Because we see, I recall at least one of these army people running around with a gun on the island in one of the clips. Let's see. Mr. Bill says, looks like Penny is having a baby or screaming for some other reason. That was my first impression. Wow, that's weird. I totally didn't see that, but I may have missed that. And Natalie in Seattle says, I thought so too, Mr. Bill. So, wow, that's weird. I wonder... I don't recall whether they showed Penny's tummy at all in the preview, or in the season 5 premiere. But yeah, I don't know. Who knows? Anyway, so James has got to go. So he wants to stay spoiler free. So he's going to take off. So thanks so much, James, for calling in. Really appreciate your comments. Glad you could be here today.
Thanks, Josh. Always a great podcast. Can't wait for the next one.
Thanks.
Take care. Bye bye.
Bye. All right, and I think that pretty much wraps it up. Thanks to everybody for all the great comments in the chat today. And Mr. Bill says, by the way, that he hasn't seen any spoilers. He's just speculating about Penny maybe having a baby or something. All right. Well, that'll about do it for this week. And I'm going to try for the people who listen to the podcast not live, who listen to it in the podcast feed. A lot of people tend to be a little bit upset about how late, especially last season, how late I was releasing the episodes of my podcast, because I was pretty much like posting them like right before the next episode aired in my time zone, which basically means that the next episode was already over by the time I posted the previous week's podcast. And a lot of people, at least on iTunes, I've gotten a couple of not very positive reviews there because people thought that I was posting my episodes too late. So I'm going to try to improve on that and post them a little bit earlier so that there's not this big gap between when we record live and when you hear it. So, all right. So, thanks again. Let's see. James took off. Mr. Bill says, call my show if you can with your thoughts, 205-332-1240. And it's behindthecuttingedge.com. So thanks thanks again, Mr. Bill. No problem giving you a plug. I really appreciate all the good comments. All right. That's it for tonight. So until next time, stay lost and namaste.
If you have a product or service that you'd like to market to thousands of Lost fans, find out how you can become a sponsor of this podcast. Send an email to thelostmeister@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Please check out the Josh Meister's Lost blog for links related to this podcast. The address again is thelostmeister, that's thelostmeister.blogspot.com. Thank you, and namaste.